speaking. It says here, "Thy speech bewrayeth thee." This was told Peter by bystanders that overheard his accent or dialect. And they said, "You're also one of them. You're also from Galilee. Your speech bewrayeth thee." Now, have any of you ever used the word bewrayeth? Probably not. Bewrayeth is an old English word. It's an archaic word. It just simply means it reveals or discloses. It's equivalent to betray. And probably most modern translations would probably say betray, where he said this. "Thy speech betrays you," or "your accent or your brogue gives you away." Galileans had the reputation of having uncouth speech. Uncouth means not particularly well developed, not refined, a rough, had the rough around the edges with their speech, and it was not refined and well developed. Now, so what does this? What might this mean today? Well, see if I can do this. See if my speech berays me. Well, look a here. If it ain't Aunt Sally and Uncle Jim, y'all just come right on in here. I can't remember the last time I saw y'all. Now, did my speech bewray me? Where am I from? The old South, right? Deep South, right? Or if I pronounce Minnesota, where might I be from? Minnesota. My speech bewrayeth me. Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if I can do this one, but I enjoy talking to people from Pennsylvania. Or yesterday when I was standing in line buying some goods at the coffee shop in the airport, I was quite excited to hear a brogue from a lady behind me. She was talking more like this. "I am quite excited about being here." You know, she was from Australia or New Zealand or England or from one of those Queen's English, proper English, you know, is what they say, countries. "I am quite excited about being here." Now, don't probably need to mention this, but we do understand, do we not, that our words are the index of our hearts. My words, the things that I say, index my heart. Jesus said this when he said, "Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh." Matthew 12:34b. "For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." With that thought, Jesus is leaving us with that principle, or with that teaching, Jesus is leaving us with this principle. Our words betray us. Our words are the index of our hearts. They tell us who we are. The Christian's imperative is Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man." We want to take this verse, the three different aspects that are highlighted there, A, B, and C, and look at graceful speech, salty speech, and knowledgeable speech. I want to have a look at these three areas. Let your speech be always with grace. What we're talking about grace, what we mean by graceful speech here for our purposes today is speech that is characterized by dignity and integrity. Graceful speech. Is your speech characterized by gracefulness, by dignity? Do we speak up to people? Do we refrain from speaking down to people? Do we build up people? Is it characterized by dignity and integrity? It is upbuilding. It is becoming. It is well-mannered. If you're from the South, for example, it's important to say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir," "Yes, ma'am," "No, ma'am," you know. But whatever is considered to be respectful and well-mannered, Graceful speech should include those mannerisms, that we speak respectfully and well-mannered to the person we're talking with. And kind, is it kind? Graceful speech includes being kind. It is looking out for the good of the other. It is kind speech. It is characterized by that gentle kindness of the Lord Jesus in our hearts. It is gentle and distinguished. It is distinguishable. And what I mean by this, by being distinguished, it is you're able to pick it out. The Christian speech of all people should be it should be distinguishable. You ought to be able to pick it out. If you're in a conversation in a large group of people, you ought to be able to pick out the Christian speech by the words he uses, by the inflections in his tone, and by his kindness and his mannerisms, his gentleness. It is a distinguishable speech. It is different from the worldling speech. It is different from the ones that consider themselves cool, the ones that consider themselves to be wanting the popularity and the prestige of men. It's not talking about himself. It is distinguishable in that it cares for the person. It cares for the one you're having a conversation with. It cares for the ones with whom you're speaking, if you're public speaking or doing teaching or something like that. That is a characteristic of graceful speech. It is caring. It is caring. Graceful speech is life-giving. Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof." Death and life are in the tongue's power. But graceful speech is life-giving. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. It's a beautiful picture. Well-chosen words fit at the right place at the right time. Have you ever had that experience where you're going through something or you're struggling with something and someone has this gift or has this ability to give a word fitly spoken, an appropriate word for an appropriate season in your life, and where it just encourages you and it softens you up? I was going through something not too long ago. I was going through some struggles and some challenges within relationships. And a brother because he was full of graceful speech, he just put his hand on my shoulder and just said, "It's going to be all right, Ken. It's going to be all right. You're going to do fine. Everything's going to be all right. We're going to take care of you." And, you know, that brought so much comfort and assurance to my heart. And right then and there, I got a new appreciation again for this verse. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. See the contrast? Now, let's think about cool. Cool. You guys know what I'm talking about? Awesome. It's awesome. Sweet. You guys are on it. Now, is there, remember we talked about how Christian speech should be distinguishable. Is a Christian speech cool? Cool. You know? I think of a passage where in the book of Revelations, God says to a church, to this one church, "I wish that you were either cold or hot." I don't see much place there for cool, for a cool church at least, right? I don't see much place there. But cool, you know what? And, you know, this comes out in speech. This comes out in speech so often. And so clearly sometimes that people try to be cool by using cool words. And, you know, it's not so cool to try to be cool. It's just not really cool. And, you know, one of the compelling motivations of popular culture today is to be cool, to be in, to be popular. And they try to do that with their speech. So I think that we as Christians need to remember that, is this graceful? Is it graceful to bow low to casual speech? Casual speech is lacking dignity and value. Just being so casual. Can you imagine Jesus in his relating and when he was talking to people? And he did. And most of the stories about Jesus is record of his conversations. His conversations with people. Most of the stories is words that Jesus spoke. Most of the things we know about Jesus, we know from what he said, right? And also from what he did in the last week of his life. However, there was always dignity. There was always value. Didn't stoop to be cool, to be cool. Now let's think about salty speech. Salty speech is defined as speech that is convicting, convincing, and compelling. Sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. So salty speech is sound speech, or speech that is convicting and convincing. It's compelling. It's speech that is seasoned with salt. It is salty. It has a way of entering in and just making people think, making people reason with themselves. It appeals to the conscience, to the intellect, and to the spirit of people. Sound speech that cannot be condemned. We talk about apologia, and we get that from 1 Peter 3:15, where it says, "But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an apologia to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." The word apologia is where we get our word apologetics. Now, apologetics is not something you apologize for. Apologetics and apology and apologize all have the same Greek foundation, the Greek root. However, when we're talking about apologetics, we're talking about a defense of the faith, a reasonable or a reasoned defense of faith, or a reasoned defense of something that we believe. That's apologia, a reasoned defense. And we are to be ready to reasonably defend the faith to every man that asks us a reason of the hope that is within us. We are to be ready to do that. This is salty speech. This is what we're talking about for today's purposes as salty speech. In Titus 1:9, the bishops are to hold fast the faithful word, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. And so here the bishop, but all of us really are called to convince the gainsayers. We're to be able to be salty, to enter in and lay salt, preserve the truth, preserve and defend the truth. Not to be put on the defensive, no, but to be able to give a reasoned explanation, to be able to convince the gainsayers, to be able to convince those that have not yet embraced what we believe and what we teach. So this is what we talk about when we're talking about salty speech. And now knowledgeable speech. It is defined as speech that is authoritative, cultivated, and informed. We'll probably spend a little bit more time on this one. Knowledgeable speech. Speech that is authoritative, cultivated, and informed. Proper speech. Is it important? Is proper speech important? Well, let me just start off with an example here. This is an actual true life example. It happened to me. In other words, I heard it. I didn't do this, but I heard this. A brother was leading in church devotions, and Matthew 7:13, he was reading this verse, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat." And he went back to elaborate on the verse a little bit, and he came to said, "Enter ye in at the straight gate." Now, straight is not a word that we use very often anymore, and it is actually an archaic English word. The King James Version uses it, and we just don't use this word as much in this context. "Enter ye in at the straight gate." So he said, "I went to the dictionary to see what straight meant." And this would be a dictionary definition for the word straight. A narrow passage of water connecting two seas or two large areas of water. Now, this is a noun definition. So I'll ask you right now, is it necessary to know the difference between a noun and an adjective? Is it necessary to know your parts of speech and to have dictionary skills? Is proper speech important? If we are to rightly divide the word of truth, then yes, I think it is really important that we are knowledgeable, that our speech is knowledgeable, that we should know how we ought to answer every man. Straight. The adjective, which is an archaic definition, is of a place of limited spatial capacity, narrow or cramped. Well, the brother went to read the first one. He said, "Enter ye in at the straight gate." Now, straight in this passage, is that a noun, adjective, adverb, verb? What is straight? Adjective? Yes, you got it. It's an adjective. All right, but he used a noun definition. So he said, it said a narrow passage of water connecting two seas or two large areas of water. And he said, I don't quite see how that fit. But I guess maybe it would because, you know, there is something narrow there, you know. And he went on to, he did a masterful job of explaining Matthew 7:13 with the noun definition for straight, you know. But he actually, it was not rightly dividing the word of truth. Because he didn't know what he was talking about. It was not knowledgeable speech. So here you have a straight, and you have a straight gate, right? Which gives you the better picture of the meaning of the verb of the a verse. Jesus taught this, and we need to know what he said. So straight, is it important? Is knowledgeable speech important? Is proper speech important? Bugs in our speech, bugs in our grammar. Let's debug it. Let's debug our speech. Let's share some of these things, and I'm going to share a few grammar bugs and pronunciation bugs. I want to share a few of those that I have in mind, and then you probably will too. And by the way, I figure by now you're really watching me and listening for something that, you know, my speech berates me. Okay. All right. You're probably doing that. Okay. That's okay. I want to be open. If you see something or say, or hear something that I said incorrectly or, help me out. Let's debug our speech and let's speak properly. Okay. Looking first at some common grammar bugs. Me, myself, and I. This is something that, you know, so many of us in our youth, when we were growing up, it was really taught us that you always put the other person first, right? You know, don't say me and you. You got to always put the other person first in the grammar, okay? And what has that done to us, though, in our proper use of grammar? And in some cases, you can do that, and it will come out right. However, let's think about this a little bit. I was going to have some examples of this, but I didn't have the time quite to put it together. Let's think here. Me, myself, and I. Okay, if you start off by saying, you and I are going to town tomorrow. You and I will be going to town tomorrow. Does that sound right? Okay, yes, it does. Because you can separate the two and they'll both make sense. You are going to town tomorrow and I am going to town tomorrow. Okay? You can make it make sense both ways. Now, if, however, you would say the store clerk greeted you and I. Okay, does it make sense there? Okay, you see the difference? Separate the store clerk greeted you. The store clerk greeted I. Doesn't make sense, does it? It needs to make sense. You need to say you and me. All right, in this case, all right, or, and the same way with myself, and you can use the same place there. So that's one of the rules that I see broken pretty often is that they need to be able to stand alone independently of the other to be able to make sense. So that help you choose between the you and me and yourself and myself and I and you. Is that clear? You have any more comments on that, anyone? I mean, there's actual English grammar rules for that, but I don't want to get real technical. I just want to kind of point out some of these things and give you something that you can take home and work with. All right, this one is the seen and done is fairly common in some circles, probably more in the South than other places, but this is the rule. Seen and done always need a helping verb in front of them. I had seen, I have seen, I have done, had done. You don't say, I seen that, or I done that, right? You always need a helping verb in front of seen and done. All right? Guilty? You understand? Right? Seen and done always need helping verbs. All right? All. This one is interesting. One of our employees, we have a part-time family business, and I had an employee there the other day who was helping us, and I think it might have been the jars or the jar lids were getting close to being empty. The box was getting close to being empty. She said, the jar lids are getting all, or something like that. Okay, here we go. Now, some of us are from the Pennsylvania Dutch background, and I immediately assumed that she was from Pennsylvania Dutch background because her speech berated her, right? Okay, season al. You know, season, that means they're empty, all right? Literally translated then in English, we would say, they're all. They're all. It's not proper. Not proper in English. It's not proper. They're all what? They're all what? They're all gone or nearly empty or all gone. Yeah, all needs something following it in that case, okay? It needs something to follow. All what? That should be a question mark. They're all question mark. All right, the next one I have service, okay? We know what VS is, voluntary service, all right? One of the mistakes that is sometimes made is when we're talking to, now, usually when we're talking with each other, we know what this means when I say, I have a son in service, right? I have a son, and I do, I have a son in service, in voluntary service, okay? But not in military service, right? He's not in the army, he's not fighting with the military or doing something like that. This happened to someone close to us. He said, I have a son. We have a son that's in service. And the Englishman said, congratulations. Thank you for helping him serve our country. You know, something like that. You know, he assumed that we're talking about the military and the service of the United States. That's what we're talking about. When you use service, need to be careful that we are understood and we know what we're talking about. It would probably be better to say voluntary service rather than just service by itself. Are we understood on this one? Is that clear? Okay, thank you. All right, them there. I don't know how many of us are guilty of this one, but it's fairly common. Them there rather than those. Them there things or those there things. Just use those. All right. Them their bugs were really ugly, weren't they? Them their bugs were really ugly. I hate them their bugs. No, those, okay? All right. Lay and lie. Let me see if I can get this one together. To use the word lay, you actually put action onto it. You lay something down. I lay myself down. Now I lay me, okay? Yes, 5 minutes, thank you. I lay me down to sleep, right? That's the way you use lay. Lay always has action done to it. You're actually laying something or doing something in laying. Now, lie is when I lie down, right? So I lie down or I lay myself down, right? So lie is when we lie down. This is just one of the ways, and it's a bit confusing, and many good grammar people sometimes get this one messed up. Okay, so lay is a direct; it gives direct object. All right, this is the next one is one that someone called me on recently. A brother said, I was saying one of the only reasons to do this is this. So I said, it's one of the few reasons or something like that. And he says, what? One of the only. Only is already exclusive, right? So one of the only. It just didn't jive. And I said, oh, thank you. I've been stuck in that trench for a long time. So he helped me out there. Excuse me. Oftentimes. Well, I guess I'll just say there is no word like oftentimes. Okay? Oftentimes. You can say oft or often, or you can say often. If you look at the recent dictionaries, you can. There is nothing like oftentimes. Okay? And this here. This here too. This here subject is not an easy one, okay? This subject. Just get those extra words out. They're fillers and they don't take up much space. All right. Any other common grammar bugs that you can think of quickly? Yes, here's one. Just one of the reasons the only or... one of the few. Yes, I actually did mention that a while ago. One of the few reasons, but not one of the only reasons. Only is already singular. It's narrowed down to, it's unique. Okay. Yeah. And there are a host of others. And I didn't bring the book up here, but the English Handbook, CLE's English Handbook, has a whole chapter, chapter 12, devoted to irregular and regular uses, informal and informal uses, and wrong and correct uses of words and in both writing and speaking. So I highly recommend that book to give you some help in some of these grammar things. Pronunciation, I want to quickly go over this. Notice I didn't say pronunciation. It's not pronunciation. Preparatory or preparatory, but not preparatory. Okay? Not preparatory. It needs four syllables. Preparatory. Well, five syllables, but it needs preparatory if you're going to say it that way. If you prefer to say it preparatory, still, I think, the preferred pronunciation. Preferable, and in some circles, preferable, but again, not preferable. Preferable. Yeah, preferable. Or preferable. As preferable or preferable. Either way, you need to pronounce all the syllables. Some KJV archaic words, bad and forbad and draft. Mischievous or mischievous? Okay, mischievous, mischievous. And I put this one last because this is a word that I think, a name that we need to express, need to say clearly, reverently, and it is a name above all names. It's not Jesus. Or, where we do a mumble, but we need to pronounce both syllables clearly and not run them together. Jesus, Jesus, but Jesus. And in some groups, some circles, they pronounce the first S with a light S. Jesus, Jesus. That way they can hear it more clearly rather than Jesus, Jesus. Okay. Be sure to pronounce them both ways, both syllables clearly. This is a name that ought to ring with clarity and with joy. Okay, I think our time is up almost. We didn't even get to public speaking. But three main rules. Stand up. Okay, go ahead, stand up. Be bold. Be clear. Be effective. Stand up. Be I didn't advance it here. Is it going? All right. Well, it's okay. Stand up. Be counted. Be as confident as you can muster. And you know what? Fear is often translated nervousness, or we say I don't feel comfortable up here. Well, do you need to really say that? Really, what are you doing? Are you not just kind of drawing attention to yourself a little bit? So stand up. And the second S is speak up. Go ahead and raise your voice. Speak with clarity and boldness. and not just some holy mumble, okay? Not some holy mumble or mumble jumble, but speak up and then shut up. The stand up, speak up, shut up. The shut up is say what you need to say with as few words as possible, speak concisely and clearly, and then be done, rather than continuing to drag out, and make more words trying to say the same thing in many different ways. Often this is a result, and continuing on like that is often the result of not being well prepared, is that we have to say things in different ways to be sure that I'm saying it right, right? So prepare well so that you can shut up with as few words as possible. Okay, I guess we are having to be finished with that. I have a lot more we could say and a lot more we could discuss and talk about, and I'd be happy to discuss it with you, I guess, privately from here on. Thank you. God bless you as you practice graceful, salty, and knowledgeable speech. God bless you.